title for today's lecture is called What Happens in a Cave Stays in a Cave, The Incest of Lot's Daughters. Now, what I think is so interesting is that Chazal understood that Perek Yud Tes of Bereishis was not simply an isolated chapter that had no reverberations for millennia ahead. Chazal hit the nail on the head when they identified with clarity that the events that we are going to study today set the stage for David HaMelech and Mashiach in the future. If you look with me in source number one, the Gemara in Yevamos teaches us this idea. The Gemara is a little bit of a convoluted Gemara drawing upon some of the more obscure psukim. We'll do our best to break it down. It's not the overall focus of today's shiur, so we're not going to spend too much time. But look with me, if you will, in source number one, the Gemara in Yevamos. Darash Rava. My dichsiv, what is the meaning of the verse? And he quotes a verse in Tehillim, which you can find in full in source number two. Az amarti, hine basi b'megillah sefer kasav alai. So what does that verse in Tehillim mean? The English is there for you. Then I said, behold, I have come with a scroll of a book written for me. That's a pasuk in Tehillim. So Rava says, what is the meaning of this pasuk? Amar David. David said, Ani amarti atabasi. I said, now I have come. Right, a person is born into the world. Now my narrative begins. Now my work in this world begins. Velo yadati, but I did not realize shebe megillas sefer kasav alai, that already my family story was written the Megillas Sefer. What's Megillas Sefer? A scroll, a book. So David HaMelech says, when I was born, when I started to live my life, I thought that this is the first chapter of my experiences in this world. I did not realize that it was already written about me earlier. Where was it written earlier about David HaMelech? Hasam Ksiv, there it's written, Hanimtsaos, which is a word we will read. Actually, I'm not sure if we'll read that particular pasuk. It's Bereishis Yotes, where the angel turns to Lot and he says, take your family, your wife, and your daughters, hanimtsaos, that are here, the ones that are not yet married. So the word nimtsaos comes from the parak that we're studying today. And hachaksiv, there is also a pasuk regarding David, where it says, matsasi David avdi, b'shemen kodshi mashachtiv, I have found my David, my servant, I anointed him with my holy oil. What I wanted to show you is that the Gemara connects Perek Yotes, that's the Perek we're going to study now, with the daughters of Lot, with David HaMelech, because the word Nimtsaos is used in the context of Bereishis Yotes. The word matsasi, same shoresh, same root word, is used regarding David HaMelech. So that's why the Gemara puts one and one together, and it says that David HaMelech was already found by Bereishis Yotes. Bereishis Yotes is the chapter of Lot and his relationships with his daughters. So we see that the Gemara is telling us that David HaMelech realizes that he's not the first chapter in his book. The first chapter goes all the way back to chapter 19 of Bereishis. Rashi makes that point in source number 3. Bishah shenimshachdi ata basi ligadula. I thought originally, now that I'm anointed, this is when my greatness begins. Umikarov paskuli gedulazu. And from a relatively recent time, my greatness is coming to me. Velo yadati, I did not know, shemimei Avraham nichteva alai b'megillah sefer. I did not realize that already mimei Avraham, from the days of Avraham, it was already written about me in the book. So what are Chazal telling us? Chazal are telling us that what we are about to read in Bereishis Yotes is setting the stage for David HaMelech and ultimately the Mashiach many generations later. This idea is echoed similarly in a medrash in source number 5 in Bereishis Rabbah. This pasuk we will read I think. Nope, just kidding. We won't read because we're going to skip deeper into the chapter. But the pasuk that the Medrash is working on is that very same pasuk where where the sun is rising, soon to rise in Sodom, and the angels say, "Nu, we got to go." And Lot and his daughters that are there, that are remaining in the house, they get going. And the Medrash says in source number 5, "Amar Rav Tuvia bar Rabbi Yitzchak." Shtei mitzios. Remember, I apologize, I deleted the pasuk from the source sheet. The word that the Torah uses, that the daughters of Lot, hanimtzaot, that were found in the house. So the Medrash says, shtei mitzios. There were two women that were found, not a reference to Lot's daughters, but a reference to the generations that will come later. Rus hamoaviyah, v'na'amah ha'amonis. A reference to Rus hamoaviyah, and Na'amah Amonis, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Matsasi David Avdi. I found, same Shoresh, same word, I found David. Heichan Matsasi, where did I find David? Bisidom. I found David, where did I find him? In Sidom. So we see that Chazal connect dots. They don't just read a perek of the Torah and say this is an isolated story. Clearly, Chazal see that what we are about to read is planting the seeds for Mashiach that will come through Rus many years later. So I entitled these first couple of sources, part one, Chazal connect dots. They see what's happening here, not on its own, but rather as a beginning of a story that will play out many, many generations later. So,
if he's saying that Matsasi Bisidom, that David's genealogy is rooted in scandal for a reason?
Well, so the reason, we'll have to wait till class number 4. But Sodom is a reference, the word Sodom is a reference to Lot and his daughter, the incest of Lot and his daughter. So let's read the story. We've been talking a lot of hype so far. Bereishis Yotess. What happens in Bereishis Yotess? So Bereishis Yotess is the chapter that deals with the destruction of Sodom. We talk about Sodom as a singular city, but in truth, we know that it wasn't just one city. It was a metropolis. There were 5 cities that made up the sort of what we speak about the New York metropolitan area, right? We know it's not just New York City. There are a number of cities and towns and so on and so forth that make up this very condensed area. So similarly, Sodom and Gomorrah was a conglomeration of a number of different cities. God originally intended to destroy 5 cities. When we talk about Sodom, we actually know it's not just Sodom, it's Sodom and surrounding cities. So in Bereishis Yotess, we learn that Sodom and Gomorrah, the people were rotten people, and Hashem said he needed to destroy them, parenthetically, not related to the source sheet, but as it comes up, you know, there are lots of rotten people throughout the entire world. Why did God specifically zone in on Sodom and Gomorrah?
Sexual immorality there too.
But everywhere. So why didn't God also destroy the places in, Europe or North America? So the Ramban writes that when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, Hashem has higher standards. In other words, the type of inappropriate behavior that we find in Sodom, God could tolerate in China. And God could tolerate in Argentina. But God couldn't tolerate such behavior in Eretz Yisrael. So that's why Sodom and Gomorrah are punished in a much swifter fashion than God would punish other people doing the same, the same terrible behavior. But if it's not in Israel, it's not in God's face, as it were. And therefore, God has a higher tolerance. But Sodom is in Israel. God is unwilling to let this behavior continue. So he destroys Sodom and Gomorrah. And he also sends angels to go and take out Lot, his wife, and his 2 daughters, Hanim Tzaos, that are there, who are not yet married. And we know that Lot originally hems and haws, is not so interested in going. He delays a little bit. Yossi has the Balkore in the room. You know that there's a Shalsheles in Perek Yotess, right? The Torah says it's Vayismahama, something along those lines, right? But Lot delays. He's not interested in leaving. Can you imagine? I mean, the storm clouds are gathering. Now it's easier because we have all of the imagery of the volcanoes and the soot and the lava, but it's probably not so dissimilar from that. And the storm clouds are gathering in the distance, and the angels of God are here to say to Lot, let's go, and he's not so forthcoming in his interest to go. just shows you how complacent individuals can be, right? But we know that ultimately the angels grab Lot and his wife and his two daughters, and they're on their way. The famous story where Lot's wife turns around, she turns into a pillar of salt, and we find ourselves picking it up in source number 6. This is in the 29th verse of this chapter. The Torah tells us as follows: Vayhi b'shaches Elokim es arei hakikar. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain, Vayiskor Elokim es Avraham, God remembered Abraham. So in other words, God is only saving Lot because of the merit of Lot's uncle Avraham. Vayishalach es Lot mitoch ha'afecha, behafoch es ha'arim asher yashav bahen Lot. And he sent out Lot out, of the midst of the destruction when he overturned the cities in which Lot had dwelt. So this is the part of the story that we're familiar with. This is pretty much the part of the story that they teach you in grade school. After Pasach Chavtes, they sort of skip to the next chapter. Because which elementary school teacher wants to teach about Lot and his daughters having sexual relations? It's not an easy conversation to have. Pasach Lamed, Vaya'al Lot mitzoar, Vayeshev Bahar. And Lot went up from Tzoar, and he dwelt in the mountain. Originally, earlier on in the chapter, Lot begs the angels if he can stay in Tzoar, because it's the fifth city, but it's a smaller city, it's not yet fully corrupt, so God gives in. By the way, somewhat ironic that Avraham begs to save all five cities, and he loses. Lot begs, and he is able to save one city. Not for now, but it's an interesting thing to just consider. The bottom line is that Lot doesn't like to stay in Tzoar. Vayeshev Bahar. So he goes to a mountain. Ushtei benosav imo. And two of his daughters are with him. Ki arei lasheves b'tzoar. He's afraid to stay in Tzoar. Vayeshev b'mara hu ushtei benosav. He goes to a cave, him and his two daughters. Pasuk lamed aleph. So the older daughter turns to the younger daughter. Interesting, the Torah does not give us names. We know Lot. We don't know the names of the daughters. But we know there's an older one and a younger one. So the older one turns to the younger one and she says, Avinu zaken, our dad is old. V'ish ein ba'aretz lavo aleinu kederech kol aretz. And there is no man that's going to lie with us in a way that is the custom of all the earth. So what do we do? We're stuck. What are we going to do? Pasuk lamed beis, lecha nashke es avinu yayin. Let us go and drink and give our father to drink wine. They, of course, had a Malaga, Manischewitz Malaga with them, because who would travel without Manischewitz Malaga? Maybe it was Moscato, okay? V'nishkeva imo, we will lie with him, unichye me'avinu zara, and let us bring to life seed from our father. What happens? Pasuk lamed gimel, v'tishkena es avi hanyayin b'layla hu, and they gave their father wine to drink on that night. And the older one goes, Vatishka Besavia, she sleeps with her father, Voloyada Bishachva Uvekuma, and he did not know when he was lying down nor when he got up. In other words, he was totally drunk and was oblivious to what happened, that his daughter violated him, and he wakes up. What happens on the next morning? Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Vayhimi Macharas, it was in the next day, Vatomar Bechira Letzira. And the older one says to the younger one, Heim Shachavti Emesh Es Avi, last night I slept with our father, Nashkenu Yayin, let's give him to drink again, Gam Halaila, this night as well, Uvoi Shechvi Imo, Unichye Me'avinu Zara. Lie with him and let us bring to life seed from our father. Notice, who's the only one talking here? The older one. The younger one, no conversation coming from the younger one. Only the older one. She's the one that comes up with the plan. And on the second day, she's the one that tells her younger sister, you got to go ahead and sleep with dad. One second. So let's just finish the psukim. Pasuk lamed hey, vatishkena gam balela hu esavian yayin. The second night, they also give their father wine to drink. Vatakam hatzira, vatishkav imo. The younger one gets up. She sleeps with her father. V'lo yada bishachvav kuma. And again, he doesn't know, going to bed, waking up, he's totally oblivious. Vataharana shtei benos lot miavihan, and Lot's two daughters conceived from their father. Chazal point out that these women were virgins, and it's biologically speaking impossible for a virgin on the first time to conceive, but somehow they mutilated themselves and were able to conceive a child. What? Okay, but you know what? I don't want to get into detail. You have to go ask. Go Google it. Okay. Vatihirana shtei benos los miavihan, and Lot's two daughters conceived from their father. Vatehled habichira ben, the older one has a child. Vatikrashimo Moav, she calls him Moav, right? Moav, from my father. Hu avi Moav arayom, and he is the father of Moav until this day, ultimately bringing forth Rus. Rus ultimately brings about David. David ultimately will bring about the Melech HaMashiach. So that's a very impactful statement. That's why the Medrash says, back to source 5 for just a moment, Heichan Matzasi, where did I find Mashiach? B'Sedom. You find it in Sedom. Batzira gam hi yalda ben, and the younger one also has a son. Batikrash shemo ben ami, she calls him the son of my nation. Hu avi b'nei Amon ad hayom, he is the father of, actually I apologize, this is the wrong English. This is the father of Amon until this day. Moab and Amon, of course, are two major nations that we will need to contend with as the text of the Torah progresses. In Bamidbar, we encounter these two nations, which is not going to be the focus of today, but this is the genesis, literally, the conception point when these two nations come into being. Yes? His daughters gave him wine? What? Does a man need an excuse to get drunk? Well, he was drinking wine. He was enjoying. They made a beautiful dinner. It was Chilean sea bass with a side of collard greens. And, you know, there was a nice Chardonnay. I don't know how to parse Chilean sea bass. So we'll talk about that. Yeah. It's a very good question. We're going to come back to that. At first glance, ladies and gentlemen, we have ourselves just another case of incest. We have a situation over here where these two daughters, they feel probably a little desperate, and they say, okay, listen, this is the stock right now, limited stock, and what are we going to do? We have to have children, the world has to keep on going, and it's just a regular old case of incest.
They also might have thought, well,
oh, very good. We're going to come back to that. Excellent point. Very good. You're right. Very good. We're going to come back to that in just a moment or two. But first of all, I just want to make note of the following. Many of these sources from this source sheet come from a sefer that was written by the Mashkiach of Keren B'Yavne, Rav Avram Rivlin, related to President Rivlin, if I'm not mistaken. Many of the Rivlins are all related, right? Oh, yeah? Are you a Rivlin? Okay. All the Rivlins are related, as I understand. In a general way.
No.
Yeah, close. Okay, excellent. So you should have like a security detail following you too. I mean, it's a very chashizah. Yeah. The bottom line is that the Rabbi Avram Rivlin, the Mashkiach of Keren B'Yavne, he writes as follows. He says, you know, when it comes to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we have this concept called Ma'ase Avos Simla Banim, that what the fathers do have is a sign for the children. The way I like to explain it is that what Avram Yitzchak did in their life set up the genetic code for what will happen in all future generations. So an action that Avraham took reverberates for all generations because it becomes part of our DNA. So Rabbi Rivlin writes that it's not limited just to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Many of the biblical characters, and certainly in Bereishis, you can apply the same principle, Masa Avos and Labanim, that the actions of the fathers creates the DNA, the genetic code for the future. So says Rabbi Rivlin, at first glance, it's no surprise that Moab will be identified with promiscuity later on in the Torah. What's the most obvious example where we see Moab is just repeating the same type of disgusting behavior of the father and the daughters? So we're going to read in Parshas Balak, right, that Balak is hired by Midian. It gets a little bit, Bilam is hired by Balak. Bilam is hired by Balak. to curse the people. Bilam ultimately is not successful in cursing because God only allows blessings to come out of his mouth. And in an act of desperation, Bilam turns to Balak and he says, you want to destroy the Jewish people? We're not going to be able to destroy them through our words and our curses, but if we send our daughters over to the Jewish people and engage the Jews in promiscuity, their God hates promiscuity. If you look with me in source number 7, Vayeshev Yisroel Bashitim, the Jewish people are encamped in a place called Shittim, Vayachel Ha'am Liznos El Benos Moav. And the Jewish people begin these despicable acts of promiscuity with the daughters of Moab. So Rabbi Rivlin points out, it's no surprise that Moab is involved with this type of behavior, because we saw it already by the Zayda. The Zayda and the daughters are involved with this horrific act of incest, and it trickles down to generations later. So it's no surprise that when we read about the Jewish people being lured into promiscuous acts, it's with that the very same nation that has the genetic DNA for promiscuity. So I'm not saying it's not their fault. We're always held accountable for our own actions. But Bernie, as you know, we all have genetic DNA. We all have DNA. We all are born with dispositions and proclivities, and it's our job in life to rise above the negative ones and embrace the positive ones. I'm sorry? Yeah, absolutely, that's the case. But I'm not erasing the responsibility. I'm simply saying that it's not a surprise that we find ourselves with the nation of Moab involved with promiscuity. But I don't want to stop there. Because if we would simply say, okay, this is an unfortunate act of incest, maybe it was a moment of desperation, that's it, we would not be doing justice to a story that has many more layers to it. And what I'd like to do now is try to uncover some of the additional layers that the Midrashim see and the Mefarshim see. So for example, the Alshech, Rav Moshe Alshech, in source number 8, he makes this point that many of the other commentaries make as well, that we really can be more generous and kind to the daughters of Lot for what they do. Because they were not motivated by simply an opportunity to have an affair with their father. The text of the Torah tells us, and this is to your point, what was motivating their behavior. If you look back with me to the beginning of source number 6, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vatomar Bechira Elatzira, Avinu Zakein, our father is an elderly man, V'ish ein ba'aretz lavo aleinu kedarech kol aretz. There's nobody available to us. The daughters of Lot look outside the cave and they see that the world in front of them is literally combusting in front of their eyes. And they say to themselves, that's it, we're the only ones left. We have no choice but to continue the world through our relations with our father. The Alshech writes in source number 8, the Ishem Ba'aretz, right, the older daughter first notes, there's nobody left, Vinish Gavaimo, we have to sleep with our father. V'lo l'chibas tashmish, it's not because they were so lustful for relations, ki lo nasmid, it wasn't coming from a place of lust. Rak, what was motivating their behavior? V'nechia ma'avinu zara. We need to continue the world. We need to provide seed for the world. Metziah Zera. V'dai lanu v'lo Yosef oledatenu. It will be once. It will be enough to sleep with my father once each. We're not going to continue. This is not an ongoing, passionate relationship. This was a moment of extreme necessity. The Alshech continues to write as follows. V'hinei. Lefi ma shenireh shechashvu shelo hayu bnei adam zulas hein v'avihem ba'olam. If we're going to take the approach that Lot's daughters looked outside, they saw a world that was literally imploding in front of them. So then the question Alshech has to focus is on is as follows. If it was so obvious to them that this is a necessity, what do we need to now account for? If it was so clear to the daughters that they needed to do this, otherwise the world would end with them.
Why didn't he recognize?
Yes! Why couldn't the daughter say, you know, Dad, right, we're in a little bit of a bind here. It's very uncomfortable, but we need to do this because otherwise the world will end with us. Why didn't they go to the father and say, Tati, we have got no choice?
They didn't want
him to know. Why, this is if there was ever a need that would necessitate, you know, something.
He may have said no.
Yeah, but I thought what?
If Zohar.
We're going to get there. Very good point. What? But why couldn't they? So the Al-Sheikh just needs to explain, if it was so obvious that the world was ending, so why couldn't they just have a conversation with their father?
This is before the Torah. This is before Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noah.
Okay, right.
There's no prohibition against incest.
Correct.
Before that.
Right.
And it's Pikuach Nefesh.
So you're just strengthening the question. The Gemara in Sanhedrin deals with this issue. Whether or not it was permitted for a father and a daughter to have relations. Whether or not that's formally one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noah. Perhaps it changed after Matan Torah. But it could be that there was nothing inherently wrong from the Torah's perspective. It still is an unbecoming type of act. So the Al-Sheikh is dealing with this issue, saying if it was so obvious that the world was over, except for those three individuals in the cave, why couldn't they have an honest conversation with their father? So what would you say?
He wouldn't want to?
You don't think somebody would allow it if the whole world rested on your shoulders?
He'd say, God for telling.
God for telling. Yeah?
Another thing
But Lot did it, the daughters didn't know that.
They didn't know that.
Okay, so I'm going to show you the Radak. The Radak makes your point. What's your name?
Ellen.
Flamholtz. So Ellen makes that point also. Lot came from Tzoar. Tzoar was yet to be destroyed. We're going to see that. But the Al-Sheikh is assuming that they looked outside and they said, listen, the world is imploding. And Tzoar might have been saved temporarily, but they felt that the world was going to blow up. They didn't know that Avram was still around. You know, you can only see up to the horizon. They couldn't take out their phone and look at weather.com and see the radar that the sulfur was only coming down on Sodom and their surrounding areas. How did
Lot know that Avram was around? They were afraid that.
How did Lot know? No. How do you know that Lot knew? How?
You can make that
suggestion, but just remember, if you're there at that moment, and all you see, as far as your eye can show you, is destruction, it's not unreasonable for them to consider that the continuation of the entire humanity rest on their shoulders. Look what the Al-Sheikh writes. He says as follows. This is in source 8, paragraph 2, towards the end of the first line. Roi lashis lev, lama asu bi'arma. Why do they have to go ahead in this conniving sort of way to outsmart their father? V'lo amru lavi nichya mi ben zera. Why can they just say it to their father? You know, Dad, we need to do this. Ki ein zulasecha l'kaima olam ayado. V'hu yaseh. Why can't they just say, Dad, we need this to happen? V'hu yaseh. The Al-Sheikh assumes that he would have agreed. Ach, third paragraph, efshar, it could be, she'im kach yomru, yikach achas mehen, v'lo taseh ha-mitzvah ayideh ha-shenis. It could be that Lot would have agreed to have one child, not necessarily to have two children. I'm not sure how that would have solved the issue. I think they were hoping to have a boy and a girl. They were hoping, right, forget about healthy. They were hoping to have a boy and a girl. V'zehu omra lecha nashke. That's why the older one says, let us go and get our father drunk. V'ayideh kein v'nichya. Then we will only have the opportunity to live on. Me'avinu zara v'lo achas v'vad. Me'avinu zara, meaning collectively, you and I will both be able to have the seed. It won't just be one of us. So that's his interpretation. Other mefarshim deal with this very same issue. But this Al-Sheikh is painting the daughters of Lot in a very different light. They were not simply two women who were interested in having some short-term passionate affair with their father, which is just, even if it's halachically mutter in that point of world history, it certainly is unbecoming, unseemly, and rubs us the very wrong way. But the Al-Sheikh is saying that this was a moment of desperation, and they really felt the weight of humanity on their shoulders. And Chazal pick up on this. The Gemara in source number 9 reads as follows. The Gemara Meseches Nazir. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. La'olam yaktim adam lidvar mitzvah. Person should always run to be the first one to do a dvar mitzvah. Shebischar laila achas shekidmasa bechira letzira. The reward that the older child had for the going ahead of the younger child Zachta v'kadma arba doros b'Yisrael l'malcho. So the older child was Zocha to be in the Davidic line 4 generations before the younger one. Again, the specifics we're not going to discuss right now, but look what the Gemara says. La'olam yachtim adam l'dvar mitzvah. The Gemara is talking about a dvar mitzvah, and the proof text that the Gemara is bringing is Lot and his daughters. So Chazal clearly think about this in a very laudatory, praiseworthy type terms. Rashi in source number 10 explains, Ovid, Yishai, David, Shlomo. So right, Rus and Boaz have Ovid. Ovid gives birth to Yishai. Yishai gives birth to David. So that, and then Shlomo, V'ilut Tzira, Lo Asa B'Yisrael Ad Rechavam. Again, without getting too involved in the genealogy over here, the older one has a claim to the Davidic line 4 generations before the younger one. In that one fell swoop, we now have a whole reframe of what happens. This was not something that was disgusting, but rather this was something that was actually quite inspiring. It was probably uncomfortable for them to think about sleeping with their father, but they felt that this is the Mesiras Nefesh, this is the type of self-sacrifice that is being called upon us at this particular moment in time. And there are other commentaries that dovetail along those lines, that certainly look at this incident in very praiseworthy terms. For example, and this goes to some point that someone said earlier, Rashi in source number 11, Vatishkena, they gave their father to drink. So nu, where did the wine come from? If you're being shoved out of your house, right? You only have 20 minutes to take all of your possessions. And unfortunately, you can think of those stories because we know that happened in the times of the Nazis. The Nazis gave people 15 minutes notice to pack up their house. I imagine they were not going into the cupboard and taking their wine. So why did they take their wine? I mean, you could say that they were just so morally corrupt in Sodom. That was one of their priorities. You could also say that the cave was visited earlier on by a group of hikers who left wine there. It could be. So it's not so necessary to say that it was a miracle. But Rashi writes, Yayin is damein lahem b'ma'ara. The wine was already prepared for them in the cave. Lahotzi mehen shnei umos. In order to bring forth the two nations. So does that mean that God said, poof, suddenly there was the Manischewitz on the table? Or does it mean that God deliberately made the hikers who were there a week before forget about their wine, so the wine was there? You know, you don't have to chalk it up to a 100% miraculous incident. The point is that God orchestrated events as such that there was wine there ready to be served to Lot so that we could bring forth into the world these two critical nations. Yes?
Why can't we? There's no timeline between the destruction of Sodom and this happened.
Right.
Why can't we say, like by Noah, he planted vineyards?
No, because we assume that this is happening all within the same immediate time frame. So we can't say it happened many. First of all, if it happened many, many days or years later, so then it destructs the entire point of what we're suggesting now. If they could see that, okay, so there was this little parcel of land that was destroyed, but beyond that, life is going on as normal, you get the sense that they literally see the smoke and all of the other elements raining down on Sodom, and they realize there's nobody else, it's just us. The Ramban, in source number 12, he makes the same point of the Alshich. Chronologically speaking, the Ramban came earlier. The Ramban writes, Be'ulai ki amru na'aseh anachnu ha'maaseh ha'ro'i lanu. The daughter said, we have to do what's being called upon us now. Ki rachem ha'elokim v'nolid zachar v'nikeva. God is going to have compassion on us, and we will give birth to a son and a daughter. V'yiskayem ha'olam mehem. And the world will be sustained based on us. Ki olam chesed yibana. The world is built on chesed. V'lo lechinam hatzilenu Hashem. And God did not save us for nothing. If we are here with our Father, the rest of the world is imploding. Must be that we are now the progenitors of humanity. Radak disagrees. The Radak, and this is to Mrs. Flamholt's point, and to somebody else that said it also, the Radak says, how can you tell me that the daughters of Lot thought that the world was all destroyed? They were just in Tzoar. Tzoar was not yet destroyed. They didn't think the whole world was going up in flames.
So if that's the case, how do you explain their behavior?
They didn't know that it was destroyed already?
They were in a small city, the fifth of that metropolis, that fifth city. They knew that city was still intact. Correct. I mean, certainly the world was in the process of, the world as a whole seemed to be in the process of imploding, but did the entire world implode, or was it just their little niche? So if you say that they thought the rest of the world was okay, so how do you explain their behavior? Was it simply this moment of passionate incest? So what would you say? They knew there were other people out there. The weight of humanity did not rest squarely on their shoulders.
They wanted to create a line of succession.
So along those lines, the Radak says that they were now going, they thought in their mind, they were now going to be blacklisted because they were associated with Sodom, this moral depravity of Sodom. They thought that nobody would ever marry them. Not that there was no one else out there. They felt that desperate times call for desperate measures in the sense that they were never going to be looked at as a worthy mate in anybody's eyes. Writes the Radak in source number 13, Rov ha-meforshim pirshu. The majority of commentaries explain, ki chashvu, they thought, ki kol ha-aretz ki Sodom v'amora, that the whole world was destroyed like Sodom and Amora. Shelo nishar ish v'isha ba'aretz, that there was no one left in the entire world. Writes the Radak in source 13, line number 2, Vizehu rachok. This is very unlikely. The word rachok literally means distant. It's a far off explanation. Shehare yatsuheim meet soar. Shelo nefcha. They left from soar, which was not overturned. Vichain yesh lahem lachashov. They also should have considered. Kishar haaretz gamke lo nefcha. Just because Sodom and Amorah are destroyed doesn't mean every place else is destroyed. Why would they have made all of those connections? Gam shamu me avihem. They also heard from their father. Ki Sodom v'Amora miras yosheveha nefcha. They saw, they heard from their father that Sodom and Amora were being punished. They knew that Sodom and Amora were being served their just desserts. But that doesn't mean that everywhere else was being punished the same way. So there was no reason for the daughters of Lot to think that the world rested on their shoulders. So then what was the reason for their behavior? Look at the next paragraph. V'tov hu ma'she shamati b'shem Yosef Kara. I'm not exactly sure who that is, but it's not Rav Yosef Cairo, although it's spelled the same way, because that's generationally, that doesn't add up. Ki amra ha-bechira, the older one said, ki lo nimtza ba-adam she-yirtza la-kaches osanu le-nashim. The older one said, no one's going to want to marry us. Ki yomru me-anshei ha-hafachahim. We are from the city that was overturned. Why was it overturned? God was furious at the behavior of these people. Who would want to marry into Sodom? Well, where's the caliph from? Sodom. Oh, yeah. You know, who would want to marry into the Sodom family? No one's interested in marrying us. By the way, this seems to work even better with the language of the psukim. Because if you look back, it's a pasuk Lam and Aleph that takes you back to page number 1. Vatomer ha-bechira el etzira. Avinu zakein ve'ish ein ba'aretz lavo aleinu kederech kol ha'aretz. Why doesn't it just say ve'ish ein ba'aretz lavo aleinu? There's nobody else. What do you mean kederech kol ha'aretz? Like the way of the land. I think that those words seem to imply that they knew there were other people out there, but no one is going to be interested in marrying us the way everybody else gets married. Kederech kol ha'aretz. We are blacklisted. Nobody wants a daughter-in-law from Sodom.
They act in their own self-interest.
But again, it does paint their motives in a better way. It takes it down a notch, right? If we think that they were saving the entire world, I think we're very forgiving. If we think they were just saving their family line, we're still forgiving, but perhaps not quite as forgiving. Bernie.
Isn't it possible that having grown up in Sodom, they saw activities like this on a more or less routine basis?
It could be. It could be, yes.
Why is it say, going back a little bit, that he was old? Is there a reason that says that
he could die?
I think it adds to the immediacy of the concern. Okay. Like if we waited...
opposite, that he may not be able to...
Form. Right, I think the Mephorshim talk about that. We should have like a rated R, you know, subline over here. But I think the simple answer is that if they were unsure about people being left in the world, they might have said to themselves, "Our dad's. Oh, we can't wait it out. We can't wait for a few months to see what happens. Maybe dad won't make it. We have to act now." I think Mephorshim also say that because he was old, it might have been somewhat impotent, and that's why he had to be given all of the wine that would help with his responsibilities. Okay, but we're going to move on very quickly. So the Medrash in source number 15, and with this part, we're going to end this part of the shiur. We've got a few minutes left. I want to go even further. But the Medrash sees over here that the daughters of Lot had the best of intentions. Writes the Medrash in source number 15, going on the words of the daughter, Lecha nashke es avinu yayin, let us go and give our father something to drink. And the end of that pasuk is, we will there nishkabai mo nichyami avinu zara, we will have seed. Look at what the Medrash writes, Rabbi Tanchuma Mishur Rabbi Shmuel, v'nichyami avinu zara. They said to each other, we will have seed from our father, they don't say we will have a son from our father. Ella v'nechya me'avinu zara. We will give birth to seed. Zara oso zera shehu ba mimakom acher. We will give birth to the seed that will ultimately come from somewhere else. Ve'ezeh, who is the seed that they were referring to? Zeh melech hamashiach. Writes the Medrash that on some level that they knew that what they were doing would have ramifications far beyond the here and the now. Did they actually think that they were going to be the progenitors of the Messiah? Unlikely. But Chazal see in their actions this sense of duty and obligation to continue populating the world. And we are clearly looking at their actions in a favorable way. We have about 10 minutes left, and what I'd like to do now for the last 10 minutes is actually to dig down deeper and to show you some of the brilliance of Chazal. Because up to now, we've really been clumping the three parties together. We have Lot, who is just as sincere, or he was complacent as his daughters, the older one, the younger one. But Chazal see that the three actors are not all the same, and that each one of them can be looked at on their own. I think this is such an interesting set of sources. So this is part three, the brilliance of Chazal, character differentiation. Because what Chazal are able to do is break down a text that doesn't have a lot of dialogue and actually give different motivations to the different speakers. So if you look with me in source number 16, this is from the Netziv. The Netziv notes that when you look at the language the Torah uses by the younger one, there's a word there that does not appear by the older daughter. If you look in source number 6, Pasuk Lamed Hei, I'll read it to you. Vatashkena gam balayla hu esavihen yayin. So they give their father to drink on the second night as well. Vatakam hatsi'ira. Vatakam. What does that word mean? She got up. That word does not appear by the older ones. Vatakam, that verb, to get up, only appears by the younger one, not the older one. So what do we make of that? Writes in the Tziv as fathers. That's a Freudian slip, right? So that says in the Tziv as follows. 16. Mishum shehadavar hayakasha be'ineha. The matter was harder for her. V'rak bedavar habichira his darizal hiskaber al yediata. It's only because of her older sister's nudging that she was able to actually go forward with this. She did not want to sleep with her father. There was more of an emotional or moral friction that she was feeling. She wasn't running to do it. And it took a certain sense of vatakam. She had to get up. She had to collect herself with this type of courage that allowed her to move forward. But it was a bittersweet type of action. And the Netziv says, v'chayotze ba lahala memvav hei. You see this similar type of bittersweet feeling in chapter 46. Where's chapter 46, Marisa? What are we dealing with? I happen to have that in source number 17. Vayakam Yaakov b'Be'er Shava. Yaakov got up from Be'er Sheva, Vayisu b'nei Yisrael es Yaakov avihem, es tapa misnishem bagalot, asher sholach paro lasei so. Yaakov gets up and he moves his family to Mitzrayim. He gets up. It's not easy. Why is it not easy? Because Yaakov knows at this moment he's going to be moving his family into exile, and who knows when they're going to return. So the Netziv says that word Vayakam implies a difficulty, an internal conflict of emotions that Yaakov struggled with and the younger daughter struggled with. So the older daughter, she was like gung-ho. She was like, this is the right thing to do. Let's go. It was morally compromising. So what? Let's just go with this. And the younger one struggled in a way that the older one did not. And that's evident from the word vatakam. Similarly, haksava hakabalah in source number 18, he also makes this point. The older one who did the seducing, right? We saw that the older one is the only one that speaks. The younger one doesn't speak. The older one who does the seducing, gam busha lo chisasa paneh milefarsim shemeavia nisabra. She has no embarrassment about this. What does she name her child? Moav, from my father. She has no qualms about what she did. Again, you can think, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? I think from Chazal over here, we see a little bit of a tinge of a negativity. In other words, this should be a morally complicated move. The Bechira had no hesitations. The Tzira really struggled. Vatakam shows us that the Tzira understood, even on a better level, that this shouldn't have been such a quick fix. In other words, there should have been real tension built up inside. Vahayaha ma'aseh etzla, the older one, kidavar nakel. It was easy. Bilti hisnagdus pinimis. There was no internal tension. Lachain amar ba. That's why it says regarding the older one, vatavo vatishkav. She went ahead easily. Aval hatsi'ira. Shahaya liba nokfa. Milahodia gunus maseh. The younger one was really struggling. Her heart was pounding in her chest. She was really hesitant to do so. That's why you have the word vatakam. That's why the word vatakam is there. I think this is really brilliant because we're taking one short narrative where the second individual has no speaking role, and yet we are building a layer of complication for her that we don't see with the older one. That's amazing for Chazal, based on one word, to build all of this emotion. And Chazal see that even in the names that they call their child, right? And Rashi points this out in source 19, which we're not going to read inside, but Moav is much more brazen than Ammon, right? B'nei Amik, from my nation, she is trying to hide what the origins are. Moav, there's no hiding there. Moav, Me'av, it's from the father. So we see that even though they acted in tandem, it wasn't necessarily the same type of action for each one. And I think Chazal are praising the younger one for having more of the tension and not just rolling with it. I'm going to ask you all the questions until the end because I want to finish. I told some people that we're going to end at 11, and Bezrat Hashem, we will end around 11. It's a rabbinic 11, so it's not on the dot. But we'll just finish up. I want to just show you that Chazal also see a difference between Lot and his daughters. His daughters were going to leave in the good seat. They did okay. Even the older one, she did what she had to do. Lot, however, we don't paint in such a good picture. If you look with me in source number 20, the Gemara Maseches Nazir is darshing a pasuk in Hosea. The pasuk says, "Ki yisharim darchei Hashem, the ways of God are straight. V'tzadikim yelchubam, righteous ones walk with these ways of God. Uposhim yikashlubam." And the sinners, they stumble on God's ways. So what is the meaning of this? So the Gemara first says a mashal, and then it rejects the mashal. And then the Gemara ultimately says as follows in source number 20, paragraph 2. Ela mashal lilot v'shtei b'nosav imo. This can be compared to Lot and his daughters. Hein sheniskavnu l'shem mitzvah. They had in mind for the purpose of mitzvah, v'tzadikim yalchubam. It's the same action. The righteous ones walk with distinction. They walk with pride. They did the right thing. That's a reference to his daughters. Hu shneskavim l'shem avera, but he who had in mind an aver. In other words, he was probably Nana. He enjoyed this interaction. What? Right. So he was drunk. So very fair point. However, we can excuse him from the first incident. But a man remembers when he's drunk. And yet he allowed his daughters to give him all of the alcohol in the second time. That Chazal already say was unacceptable. If you look in source number 21, Rashi, there you go. Very good, Dr. Gantra. So Rashi, it's okay. We'll skip it. Rashi notes that if you would look in the text of the Torah, when it speaks about the father getting up, and speaks about Lot getting up, so in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vatishkena Saviha Nyayim Balayla Hu, Vatavoa Bechira Vatishka Besavia, Velo Yada Beshachva, he didn't know when they lied down with him, Uvikuma, and of her rising. If you look at a Torah, there are dots over the word Uvikuma. When there are dots over a word, it's part of our Masoretic text and the traditions that we have, that word is almost as if it's not there. In other words, Velo Yada Bishachva, he didn't know about it when she lied with him, but Uvikuma, you know, how could a man not know when someone is lying with him? And as drunk as a person is, they still have somewhat of a recollection. And Rashi writes in source number 21, Shel Bechira Nakud. The word Bechira, there are dots on top of it. Lomar Harehu Ki'ilu Lo Nichtav. To tell us as if this word is not really here. Lomar Shebikuma Yada. He knew when she got up. He was somewhat cognizant of what was happening. V'afal Pichein Lo Nishmar Leil Sheni Milishtos. He didn't tell his daughters to stop serving him wine on the second night. His willingness to be seduced again speaks volumes about what his intentions were. We don't get the sense that he was motivated to populate the world. So, like your point, maybe he was very confident that Avram is still alive. The man was enjoying this experience. So if you're gonna have to do an Avera, you're gonna have to do an Avera Lishma, an Avera for the right reasons, you have to have the right mindset. The daughters had the right mindset. Again, we can differentiate between the older and the younger, but they had the right mindset. But the man himself enjoyed too much. Yeah. And Chazal are critical of Lot for this. And I'll end with an unbelievable Al-Sheikh. The Al-Sheikh says, because there was a differentiation of motivation, the daughters had the right motivation, the father did not, there's a differentiation in the halacha as well. How was Rus allowed to marry? Rus was a Moaviyah woman. How was she allowed to marry into the Jewish people? Because the halacha is Moavi velo Moaviyah. When the Torah prohibits the Moabites from marrying in, it only prohibits the men, not the woman. Says the Al-Sheikh, where did that come from? Comes from this incident. Writes the Al-Sheikh in source number 22, Vateharena Shtei Benos Lot, that the two daughters of Lot became pregnant, Me'avian Yatza Davar, from their father, Valkein Echshov, Shelios Kavanas Benosav L'Shamayim. The daughters had the intentions that were proper. They wanted to continue the world. V'lo Kein Hu, but not him. Siya al hetar hanekevos lavo bekahal. This is a help for us to understand why the men cannot enter the Jewish people. Sorry, why the women are allowed to enter. Velo hazicharim, but not the men. Vegam chelkan bemalchus beis David al yedei nekevos velo al yedei zachar. That's why the women, with their self-sacrificing actions, ultimately do contribute to the Davidic line, but not the men. And this is Chazal differentiating Lot on the one hand from his daughters on the other. I'll end with one quick story, and it's going to take me one more minute. Ladies and gentlemen, one last point. And if you don't believe me, I have the text here to prove it. I'm not going to read it inside. But there is an unbelievable story included in the beginning of Igros Moshe, Chilechas. Chilechas of Igros Moshe was printed after Moshe Feinstein passed away. It was compiled by his son, Rabbi Tandler, and his grandson also. But there's, his son-in-law, right? So, thank you. So, in the beginning of Igros Moshe, it tells the following story, that when Rav Moshe was still a Rav in Russia, in Luban, in the earlier part of the 20th century, there was someone that had a terrible illness in their mouth. A terrible illness in their mouth. and the person was suffering terrible pain, and the person was dying, and they asked to speak with Rav Moshe. And the Rav Moshe came to visit the person, and the individual said, everybody else must leave. And the individual goes on to say that a few days ago, he was speaking with a friend about the daughters of Lot, how disgusting their actions were. And then the man got sick, and he had a dream. And in his dream, the daughters of Lot came to him, and they said, you spoke negatively about us. We only acted for the right reasons, l'shem shemayim, and because your tongue was used for lashon hara, now your tongue will ultimately be part of your demise. You can't make this stuff up. And if this was just from Kabbalistic Sefer, I'd say fine. It's Mamish of Moshe Feinstein Sefer, Negros Moshe Cheleches. So it gives us pause to reconsider at first glance what we think to be such a distasteful, morally abhorrent story is actually far more complex, far more positive than we would have given initial thought to, and does begin to plant the seeds for an amazing character to follow, David, and ultimately the Melech HaMashiach. Right. So, Mirza Hashem, next week we're going to continue discussing Yaakov marrying two sisters, and then we'll take it from there.